It's time for Senior Talk with Carol Higgins Taylor, a show designed with seniors in mind. Carol discusses everything from Social Security to senior housing, medications to Medicare, and so much more. And now, your award-winning host, Carol Higgins Taylor.
Hi, and thank you for joining me today and spending the next half hour with me, I hope. We are talking about aging, as this is Senior Talk, and how to live a longer, hopefully healthier life. My guest is Dr. Eric Rogers, PhD, who is part of the MDI Biological Laboratory in Bar Harbor. The MDI Biological Laboratory is independent, nonprofit. It's a biomedical research institution that develops solutions to the complex human and environmental health problems through research, education, and ventures that transform discoveries into cures. More good news. The institution is focused on increasing healthy lifespan that we will be talking about and harnessing our natural ability to repair and regenerate tissues damaged by injury or disease. Dr. Rogers, thank you so much for being here.
It's great to be here.
So you have an interesting story. How did you get into the aging research?
It was quite by accident. I was actually studying to be a scientist in another area completely. And
Meteorology, right?
Yes, I was an atmospheric scientist, and I came home one day and caught a program on Discovery or Learning Channel, and it was on the genetics of aging. And this was probably around 1998, and what I was just finding out by watching this show is there had been a real revolution in our understanding of how aging works, how it's regulated, and that had just happened in about the past previous 5 years, 5 to 10 years. And what I came away with, I didn't know, I wasn't a biologist. What I came away from the show with was, I don't know how it works. I don't know why nature put this in, but we have the ability to go in and modulate aging, the rate of aging and healthful lifespan in animal systems that are used, very diverse animal systems. And what that says is it's very, very likely that we can do the same thing in humans because we share the same genes and the same types of processes regulate our responses to our environment. And that's really what it comes down to.
So did you just go to your advisor and say, hey, I'm not doing weather anymore?
he wasn't too happy. I was, I had just kind of gotten to the point where I was probably up and trained to be a fairly independent scientist. And I said, you know what, I got to go back to school. So it was a very long process. And he wasn't too thrilled. but it was absolutely the right thing for me to do at the time.
It's an exciting field, especially as we're living longer, and you are in the best place to do it. Maine is the oldest state in the nation. So years ago, the lifespan 50 years ago was what, 50, 60?
It's changed a lot.
It has.
Right now, we are adding another year every 2 to 4 years. So it's remarkable how quickly, median lifespan is increasing. It's almost like if you live long enough, then you live long enough for all these, great new technologies and health regimes to push your lifespan and the period of healthy life out for as long as possible.
Because they joke that 50 – is the new 30. So someone is as vibrant and active and feeling good at 50 that they did back in maybe 100 years ago, they would at 40.
And that is that is absolutely true. And that's the goal of the research that we're engaged in. Basically, we want to bring back or maintain quality of life for people for as long as possible. And that includes being able to get out and do the kind of things that you love to do when you're younger, but being able to do that even after retirement,
So you're looking at not necessarily having people live to be 150, but to have those maybe live to be in their 90s, but have them healthy, as healthy as they were perhaps in their 50s or 60s.
Essentially until, the goal is to be 100% healthy until the day you drop dead. That's sort of the ultimate. There's a lot of interest in living longer, but there's everybody I think would come to agreement that there's really no point to living longer without some level of quality of life, and so that is first and foremost what we're working to achieve, and a lot of the types of things that we do in the lab where we get a lifespan increase, they often go hand in hand with an increased resistance to age-related disease.
Yeah, there's nobody who wants to say, I want to live to be 100, but if I have Alzheimer's, that's fine. They're not interested. Yeah. So you work with an interesting organism. You're using the tiny roundworm, which is tiny. I did some research, and it's like 1 millimeter. It's tiny, microscopically, really. How did you decide to work with those?
Well, this is the organism, this tiny little roundworm that we use microscopes to look at. This is the organism that really started the revolution in our understanding of aging, because what researchers were seeing at the time is that you could literally change one nucleotide in one gene and double lifespan. And again, when I first heard this, I didn't know why that should be. That didn't make sense from what I knew about nature, limited though it was. But I knew what the consequence of that was. And that is, we take drugs all the time to change the activity of genes in our bodies. If you can change the activity of a gene just by, you know, tweaking one small spot in that gene and get an amazing effect, like a doubling of lifespan. Not just that, but basically you create a superworm that you can throw radiation and toxins, poisons, heat, all these things at, and they are resistant. They won't. They are super hardy. You can put disease, basically genetically put disease in these animals. And it's something that is simulates an age-related disease like what we see in a human population. And in these genetic models of lifespan extension, we see they're more resistant to it. It takes longer for them to succumb to that disease. And so one of the great things with a worm, working with a worm as opposed to, say, a mouse, there's really an we can do anything we want with the worm, and their life cycle is about 2 weeks, you know, as opposed to a laboratory mouse, which is a couple of years. So I want to know, you know, they grow up in 3 days, they live for 3 weeks. If I want to know if something changes the lifespan of that animal, I have my answer within a month. So it can be used to rapidly accelerate certain kinds of tests that we can do. When we are trying to research how aging works.
So talk to me about pathways. What does that mean?
In terms of genetics, these are basically how groups of your genes work together to execute certain programs in the cell, say, for making new proteins, or ones that would participate, say, in cell division, tasks that are specific to the tissue, for example, like your liver and detoxifying alcohol and drugs and that sort of thing.
And so how does that work with your research of promoting healthy aging?
Well, the key to promoting healthy aging in the strategies that have been devised and what the models and the science shows is that it really comes down to tapping into adaptive responses in our cells. So we can all everybody knows what adaptation is. You might adapt to a new job or a new environment. At the molecular level, you might adapt to changes in nutrients, what you're eating. You might adapt to a change in humidity even. And at the cellular level, if you think about single cell organisms or these little worms that we use in our research, environment is very important. The environment might get too dry. It might get too hot. And how does the organism respond? It has to adapt. That seems to be the key. What we're doing in a lot of aging research is basically unlocking the key to maximize that adaptive response, because this happens all the time with our cells. Our cells are constantly having to adapt. One of the things we see as we get older is we lose that ability. And so if you can find ways of turning up that ability to continue to adapt to changing environments, you help keep all of those processes going in the cell that keep it alive and that keep it healthy and functioning. When you lose the ability to adapt, that means that, okay, when it got too hot or there weren't enough nutrients around, now rather than implementing some strategy for survival, you just sort of succumb to the environmental pressure. And that is associated with that sort of age-related decline we see. All of our tissues, all of our biological functions seem to sort of deteriorate. And the goal, the strategy from all of the research that I and many others have done is that you want to find ways to keep those methods of adapting, those signaling pathways, genetic signaling pathways that are really important for responding to what did we eat for breakfast, how much sleep did we get last night.
So it may sound like science fiction, but really you're just unlocking what we can do ourselves if we had that knowledge, or making our cells more adaptive to what maybe they did in the beginning, and then as we age, they're just not doing anymore or as well. When we come back, we will talk more about this research, so stay with us. Hi, we're back with Dr. Eric Rogers. We are looking at adapting. He is looking at adapting our natural cell process, plugging into what we can already do, strengthening that so that the cells don't break down and leave us open to Alzheimer's and cancer and all that. And there are ways to do this. What are some of the mechanisms that you see to tap into nature and increase that, the things that the cells can do automatically?
Right. Well, we already had a lot of clues because we know what happens when we eat a meal. We know what happens to our blood sugar. We know how that leads to an insulin release to be able to tell other tissues in the body it's time to take up glucose. All of this coordination happens in a very
chain reaction.
It's a chain reaction. There's a lot that can go wrong. And so the goal is to keep everything working right. The miraculous thing is that we are not really creating anything new. We are learning how nature developed strategies essentially to deal with harsh times. If you think about what are the tenets of life, or what is required for life, we need to be able to grow and reproduce, and we have to be able to adapt to changing environment. If our ability to grow and reproduce is extremely limited, then that means that any sort of anything that can go wrong might wipe us out, right, as a species. So if you go back in time, evolutionary, back in single-cell organisms, they had to be able to survive. And in those conditions of survival, you can imagine that whole program for growth and reproduction, that's not really going hand in hand. It's not meshing right with a stressful environment. If that stress means you don't have enough food, that stress means it's too hot, those aren't good times to grow and reproduce. So what do you do? What does nature do? It hunkers down and it says, okay, survive long enough for conditions to get better so that you can reproduce. That's basically it. And what we're doing is we're tapping into these programs that are the stress resistance programs. If you think about it, we want to grow and reproduce while we're growing and while we're young and want to have children. But after that, we don't want to push those growth programs that much. That could actually accelerate, type 2 diabetes, incidence of type 2 diabetes. It could accelerate cancer. These are all things where we're sort of sending signals constantly: too much insulin, too many nutrients for growth, when really what we want to be doing is maintaining the tissues that we have. And we want our cells to adopt those strategies for keeping themselves hearty and healthy and functioning properly. And so we want to tune into that stress resistance mode as much as possible.
When you talk about going back to the beginning and survival, and you hear a lot of people say, Darwin said it, survival of the fittest, when really that's not, probably not what he said, but also not what he meant. It's survival of adaptability. And so being able to adapt, it's not really how strong you are, it's how adaptable you are to the current conditions that can keep you surviving, keep you alive. Would you say that's accurate?
Well, yeah, Darwin, obviously he pushed survival of the fittest, and part of that was being able to reproduce. But another part of fitness is, what do you do when conditions aren't good for reproducing? If you can't reproduce and you can't survive the conditions that are the reason you can't reproduce, then you're out of the gene pool. So, you know, in times of plenty, the strategy for nature is, all right, let's pump out as many of the next generation as we can, and let's grow as quickly as we can. When conditions are bad, though, you definitely want that program to change so that the species can survive. The great thing is, what we see that nature really intended probably for maintaining a species as far as living long enough to reproduce, we might be past, you know, most of our lives might be past our reproductive interests. And so we're really interested in just maintaining the health that we have when we're younger and keeping it from keeping ourselves from losing that ability. And the good thing is, all the evidence shows that we can tap into those programs even after we're done reproducing, and we can do that in a worm too. The worm reproduces the first week of its life, then it basically hits middle age and it's done reproducing. We can engage these programs, we can help turn them on just by either through genetics or by exposing the animal to conditions that are a little bit stressful, but are something the animal can fully recover from. And that seems to help bring out those positive aspects. And that would be analogous to exercise in a human population, possibly to the, you know, anecdotal evidence that some people say you go into a sauna or something that is very hard actually on the body, that there are health benefits to be had from that. We now understand something about why that's true, you know, at the genetic level. We understand something that about how we are turning on these health programs essentially at the molecular level.
When people are past the age of reproduction, or when they would want to, but do the cells keep growing, so we keep having, they keep depending on the nutrients that we take in and continue to go on as if, you know, we're all in our teens?
Yeah, obviously we can't stop eating.
No.
But, you know, diet is one of these areas of intense interest, because one of the most robust responses for increasing health and healthful lifespan across different species is through different forms of dietary restriction.
When we come back, we're going to talk about dietary restriction and how that can have an effect on how we age and what our cells do as we age. If you'd like to hear this show again, log on to WVOMFM.com and listen to it in podcast form. And if you'd like to know more about the MDI Biological Laboratory, log on to MDIBL.org. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk. So, Dr. Rogers, let's talk about what some of these mechanisms are that you can do. We talked a little bit about dietary restriction. What does that mean? I hear those words and I shudder, I have to say.
Yeah, dietary restriction involves restricting nutrients in different ways without causing malnutrition.
And that's the key.
That's the
key. Don't just go cutting your calories.
Right, right. You need to maintain a sensible diet, absolutely. But what we see is that this whole idea of promoting healthful responses in your cells, this can be promoted through forms of dietary restriction. It can be chronic by cutting calories and maintaining proper levels of nutrients. It can be done by fasting. Occasional fasting can see many of these benefits. There are people, including myself, who will go for a 12-hour period during the day where we don't eat. So basically from the time after dinner until maybe late morning or lunch the next day, I really have no desire to eat. I have plenty of energy. And so I give my body a break for a span of time. And that is going to – the idea behind that is you're encouraging your own cells to sort of adapt to be able to control blood sugar if you're still healthy enough to do so without, you know, feeding yourself every few hours.
So we want to maintain – cells grow so that we can grow. And so are you saying we want to do more maintenance than having them continue
right.
to grow, maintain them at a healthy level, and do whatever it takes just to maintain them, but prevent them from continuing to grow?
Basically, we do have cells that continue to grow throughout our life. We constantly have to generate new immune cells.
Okay.
But most of our growing is done. It's limited. What we want to do is tap into these adaptive pathways. And some of the ways we might be able to do that isn't necessarily by starving yourself or adapting to these types of very stringent dietary conditions. One of the things we'd like to do is to just trick the cell into thinking this is a stressful time. Maybe nutrients aren't aplenty. So become more efficient. Put yourself in this more efficient mode, even though you haven't actually restricted yourself dietarily. And there are already drugs around that have a potential for this. They've already been approved for use in humans for other things. And now we realize, hey, these are targeting these longevity assurance pathways that we're interested in.
So we want to stress the body, but in a good way.
In a good way.
This horrible, something bad has happened, a job loss kind of stress.
Whatever, whatever stress that you give yourself, you want to make sure that you can fully recover.
So like lifting weights, exercise stress, recover from that.
Exactly.
And
so that's going to be an individual thing. I definitely wouldn't encourage anybody to do anything extreme if you're already very sick. It can be harder to bring about those adaptive responses if you're already extremely ill.
Yeah, and he's a professional. Don't try this at home. We're not encouraging you to cut your calories way low. God knows I'm not going to. And to exercise ridiculous levels. But the point is that could be a path to not having cells break down that could open you up for Alzheimer's or cancer.
That's right. I mean, here's the thing that people should keep in mind. When you eat, when you sleep, when you exercise, you are telling your cells a story. You are giving them a narrative of the state that they're in, and that is something that's transmitted to the genetic level. One of the things I came to appreciate as a biologist was that our genes are not static, and we activate or inactivate genes depending on what we do, our actions, our day-to-day lifestyle. And so once you realize that, it adds a lot of power to now what we know about the health benefits of exercise, because we know something about what's happening at the molecular level to impart those benefits. The same thing with nutrient, different types of dietary interventions. So it all comes down to telling the right story to your cells. And the hope is we're going to have a lot of therapeutics coming out here in the future to help us.
That will help us live well into our 90s without the diseases that can take us down early. Dr. Rogers, you have been a wealth of information. I thank you so much for being here. You will have to come back. We'll talk more about this because there is still a lot more to be said. If you'd like to hear this show again, log on to WVOMFM.com or MDIBL.org and learn more about the research. That's it for me. Thanks for listening.
This has been Senior Talk with Carol Higgins Taylor. To listen to this show again, log on to our podcast page at WVOMFM.com. That's WVOMFM.com.